One of the things that happens when you become a YouTuber is that eventually you want to create more channels. I can't tell you how many times I talk to YouTubers who like get multifaceted, like, oh, I want to build a YouTube channel about this and YouTube channel about this. But today we talk with someone who has done this successfully and earned some silver and gold play buttons along the way. Welcome to the Women of YouTube podcast. This podcast is hosted by me, Desiree Martins. Every week, I'm going to be showing up in your earbuds to inspire you on your YouTube journey with killer interviews with women YouTube creators, deep dives into the inner workings of how YouTube works, and discussing all the things about YouTube culture and the impact it is having on our world. This podcast is brought to you in partnership with vidIQ, where they help you maximize your video's YouTube reach by studying titles, description, tags, and playlists relevant to your subject matter, while also studying your competitors to help you know exactly what you should be doing for your YouTube growth. So if you're a female creator looking to grow your channel, level up your content, and learn from the best women creators on the platform to get you on your way to YouTube success and future-proofing your income, this is the perfect place for you. Let's do this. What's up, ladies? Welcome to the episode of the Women of YouTube podcast. I hope that you are excited about diving into this episode because it's going to be filled with so much great information about what you can do to have a multi-channel brand. I talk with the fabulous Marina about her language brands and how she has this vlogs and how she does things in English and in Russian. And she's just a super cool person who's doing super cool stuff. She's got lots of different streams of income. She's found really great ways to grow and niche down. And I think that you guys are going to learn so much from her that's going to help you along your YouTuber journey. I also hope that you are all having a fantastic holiday weekend as this is recorded right before Thanksgiving. And I want you to know that of all the things I get to do in my business and in my life as a creator, this podcast is hands down like my top three favorite thing that I get to do. And I am so grateful for you for listening and joining me on this journey. Thank you so very much. And without further ado, here is that podcast. Welcome to the podcast, Marina. I am so excited to chat with you today.
Yeah, likewise. Thank you for inviting me.
Yes. Okay. So to get started, why YouTube?
It's a great question. So back in 2014, when I started applying to American universities, so the story is I decided that I want to get my MBA or master's, and back then I was in Russia, and I didn't know about YouTube. I knew that the platform existed, but I thought it was for kids watching other kids put on makeup for the first time. So the concept of the platform for me back then was something like this. But then I started preparing for GMAT, and I realized YouTube is actually one of the best resources because people shared actual tips. They shared their experience, and I thought, wow, this is an amazing platform. So I used it every single day to prepare for my tests. And then I took the test, and I'm like, you know, people are posting about their experience. I want to share mine because I'm a foreigner. You know, I took a test in Helsinki and, you know, I just wanted to share that. So I recorded a video about taking GMAT. And then I thought, you know, why don't I just document the whole journey of applying to an American university? So the second video was about the second test that I took. And then I made a video about writing this personal statement. And then at the same time, we were raising money for our first company, LinguaTrip, and we got funding from a Silicon Valley accelerator. And so at the same time, I got these offers from amazing universities in the US, and I also got, we also got as a company this funding. So we moved to the United States and to Silicon Valley in April 2015. And I thought, you know, this is the whole new chapter of my content. Now I can document my journey of moving to the US. And suddenly, so I've been posting and posting, and my typical view count was like, you know, like 500, 1,000, maybe a couple of thousand. And then 8 months into YouTube, I recorded a video about buying a car. Mm-hmm. And then that video went viral. It was the first time I actually saw 50,000 views and 70,000 views. And I was like, wow, all of these random people coming to my channel just, you know, because I post a video about buying a car. And I realized this is something really cool because, first of all, I love posting things, and I was away from my family and they saw everything that was happening to me. Second, we noticed that we had an influx of customers from people who watched my channel first, and they were like, oh, what is the company that you're building? So we had first customers. And then a bit later on, I was able to start consulting people on how to get to American universities, and helping them with their personal statement and helping them with GMAT. And I started making money on that as well. And I was like, okay, this is amazing. And then I started my second channel because I wanted to do everything but in English, because the first one was in Russian. And then a couple of years later, I started my third channel because I realized I also want to talk about business, and like mixing different topics on one channel doesn't really work for me, at least. And yeah, this is it. Now I'm with three channels and it's over
six. At this point, you're just a junkie, it sounds like.
Yeah, exactly.
YouTube junkie. Exactly. Obsessed with the platform and creating great channels. Okay, so then you have to tell us, hey, what are your three channels about?
So my first channel, the oldest channel, the Russian one, is about, like, people know me for teaching English, but I also post about Silicon Valley and starting businesses. So now it's like this lifestyle channel. The video that came out today was about NFTs and metaverse. So it's basically about everything. And I like that with that channel, I built this personal connection with the viewers, so they would watch anything that I would post about, which gives me a lot of creative freedom. The second channel, which is the largest channel, is Lingua Marina, where I talk about English, like how to speak with an American accent, how I learned English. And that one is 4.5 million followers.
Wow.
Crazy that last week my shorts got more views than my actual videos, which is an amazing trend. And I'm super excited about it. And then my third channel is Silicon Valley Girl, about 500,000 followers. And this is where I interview people from Silicon Valley and just talk about my Silicon Valley life.
Okay, very cool. Now, you have been able to do a lot with building up this brand, and it sounds like you're very multifaceted. What advice do you have to those of us, including myself, because this is a super personal question, people who have multifaceted interests, because you have these three different channels. The first two kind of relate to each other because they're around English and speaking English. But then you have this other one's about like a more of a vlog style. What is your advice for those who are interested in having multiple channels and trying to manage it all and making sure that all gets done and still maintaining a level of quality and growth for both of them or for all of them?
Yeah, so I would say start with a topic that you're most familiar with. Like if you're an expert in something, that will be the easiest topic to start with. Because I know it's very tempting, and I have this course for YouTubers, and like every single student who comes in, well, not every single, but a lot of students, 80% of students want to start with a lifestyle blog. Because they're like, oh, I want to document my trip. I want to do this, this, and that. But I'm like, why would people watch it? Like, what is the value there? So you can mix lifestyle and value, but I think it's super easy to start with a so-called expert blog. Like if you're a CPA or you are, I don't know, a camera guy, or I don't know, you did this or that professionally, and giving tips on your professional expertise, that will be the best. And then another tip that I give all the time these days is once you've made a video, repurpose it for TikTok, Reels, and Shorts. So what we do, we just cut different parts of the video to make it watchable in short form, or you can just record a separate video. So these are two processes that you need to start simultaneously, because okay, Shorts provide such great growth right now, and TikTok and Reels, like with all the platforms competing for creators, I think this is the best time to grow for new creators.
Right. Why do you think that? I feel like a lot of people probably are out there thinking, oh, I'm just too busy right now, or the industry is overcrowded, or, you know, I missed the boat, you know, or like, oh, all of the big people are already snapped up, I'm not going to have this opportunity for growth. What do you have to say to people that feel that way?
I think we're going into the world where we're not gonna follow just the big creators, and I don't really watch Mr. Beast videos every day, and he's the largest YouTuber out there. I barely watch his videos. So everybody finds a creator who they can relate to, and I think we're going into like smaller niches. I think in the future everybody would have some kind of social media outlet, and they would. And there would be less people who have millions of followers, but more people who have like maybe 10,000, 20,000, because there is just this relatability and experience that you can learn from instead of just watching this 10 million follower blogger. And with these new tools like Reels and TikTok, I just see that my feed is completely different from what it used to be a year ago, just because I'm following more and more new people. And I just like how a lot of people just started a couple months ago and now they have millions of followers thanks to the new algorithm, thanks to the new format. But of course, I would still post long form videos just because it's a different type of connection, because they live a lot longer than short form content. And it's just for me, like, long form is the best. But in order to grow, I also experiment with the short form.
So let's talk about this short form question. So one of the things that I know I get personally asked with repurposing content is, how do you reformat a vertical video or a horizontal video for a vertical platform? How do you suggest resharing that? And then what do you recommend that you do with your long-form content when you're converting into short-form content? Like, what should we be looking for? What should we be doing to make it better so that we're repurposing effectively?
So yeah, when you write a script, just think about both long and form short, long and short form. When you actually film a video, you just need to be so something like this, so you could cut me out and it would still be, good for TikTok and other platforms. So when it's a talking head, this is the easiest type of video to repurpose. And when we write a script, we would always say, like, this video is about this, this, and that. And then I would have like maybe 5 bullet points, and I would number one, like, I don't know, top 5 words you need to know. Number one, this. And then in a long form video, I would just go and explain and give more examples. In a short form, I would just mention that. And so it makes it really easy to repurpose. So we just do, my TikTok is 1.6 million followers, and all of the videos are repurposed from YouTube. Maybe we have like 2 or 3 that I made specifically for TikTok, but because I don't have that much time, we just repurpose everything and it works.
I love that. And why do you think that that's an important thing to do? Like, why do we need to be on these different platforms versus just focusing on one and making it like where we spend our time and where we are truly effective and growing, like growing massively there?
Yeah, well, because it's never been easier. You don't really need to, like, if we talked about TikTok, Instagram, and YouTube 2 years ago, well, TikTok was this super new format. I don't remember 2 years ago. Yeah, probably it was new. But anyways, Instagram specific
attention definitely in the pandemic era.
Yeah. So, like, the formats were completely different. Now we have this one format that performs well on every, like, on TikTok, Reels, and Shorts. So it's never been easier. You create one video, it's the same kind of scenario, same kind of dynamic, and you just post it everywhere. You don't even have to edit it for every single platform. So because it's so easy, and because there are some, you don't know where you're going to grow, I would just post it everywhere, because it takes basically, 2 minutes to post everywhere.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it takes a little longer than that to do it right and all of the different formatting elements. But yeah, I get what you're saying.
But yeah, it's not the most, the thing is, like, obsessing with hashtags and adding the right, I don't know, music for the platform, this is not the most important thing. The most important thing is content anyway. So I would rather spend more time on thinking about the script, or how do I look in the video, like what I'm wearing and what is going to be on the thumbnail, because thumbnail is going to be the same for like Shorts. What is the first frame that people see?
I think that's really helpful. So you have all these platforms, you're creating all this content. How are you able to manage it all? Like, do you have a team? Is it you doing it? Like, how are you able to make this all work?
Yeah, I have a team. I have first of all, I have I call her YouTube manager. So a person who I trained myself, she writes all the scripts. She works with my editors, and I have 2 editors. So she just does this back and forth. Oh, we need to add this or cut this out. She works with the thumbnail designers. We also have a couple, but they're all like contractors, so they're not full time. She also creates scripts for TikTok. She does all the research, posts the videos. Then I have a salesperson who does brand deals.
I know.
And who else do I have? Oh, and I have the whole team behind my course, but that's like a separate team. They're like over 20 people.
And what was it like as you were building? How did you build up this team? What did that look like? Because some of us are you know, just starting out, not very far along. Some of us are in a growth period and are trying to figure out like how to create more content to make more money. But we know that you can't make more money if you don't have the right team behind you to help execute things. How did you build up that team? What did that look like? And what tips do you have for us?
Yeah. So number one tip is do everything yourself first, because you won't be able to understand what you're delegating. And I think it's, you know, I think it's a luxury to just hire someone right away. I did everything myself, even with like all the new platforms, TikTok, et cetera. I tried to do everything myself first. And then I realized, okay, this part of the process, this is something I don't really enjoy doing, like editing. I'm not the best editor out there. But because I've done it myself, I create like a checklist for my editor. You know, this is what I want to see. There should be like the frame has to change every 2 seconds. These are my tips for my title. But basically, yeah, because I did all of those checklists, I decided, why don't I just do a course? So this is how it, so now I hire all the people from my own course. But my first hire was an editor, and I was just so tired of editing all the videos for YouTube. It took 6 hours per video. I was like, I'd rather create more content. Like, I would ask myself, what is my superpower? My superpower is to talk to a camera, but there are so many things that could be outsourced and I don't have to spend my time on it, like writing a script, doing the research. That doesn't mean that I just read whatever my manager prepared for me. I would add stuff. I would add my own examples, but I will have this framework at least. And then editing and thumbnails. So basically right now I delegated everything except for actually filming.
And I think that's good. Now, what financial place were you at when you started the outsourcing all that work?
Yeah, so I think I was able to make maybe like $300 to $500 a month from AdSense. This is when I hired my editor, and he charged something like, so because I hire, also the hiring process, I mostly hire people in Eastern Europe or Russia, okay, and it's cheaper. So my editors charge from $10 to $15 an hour, which means a video is like $70. But back then it was even cheaper. I think my first editor charged something like $6 an hour. Mm-hmm. So I was delegating and I was break even with my AdSense, but I was also making money as a, like my company was making money because we're driving customers to it. So it totally made sense to delegate and produce more content.
That makes a lot of sense. And then, and like, I think it's important to, you know, just because I've had an editor for my channel since day one because of my, what I was doing. I was growing my agency. I had kids that were very little that still needed me, like literally needed my body to live. And so it was one of those things, like if I having an editor from the get-go, it allowed for me to make sure that this thing I needed and wanted to do was getting done. And so I think it's important to ask yourselves, like, I love how you broke down, like I did everything first and then I realized what I don't like doing. And I found a way to outsource the work that needed to get done so I could do more of what I liked to do, which allowed for everything to increase.
Exactly. Yeah. So, yeah. So, and with kids, I think the first hire should be a nanny. Like I have two kids myself, and without a nanny or daycare,
yes,
it would have been impossible.
I that as well. I had the first 2 years of my agency, it was at home. It was me doing haphazard stuff. But I put my kids in daycare. But I had a slightly unfair advantage in that it was daycare in Korea. And so it was insanely affordable. Mm-hmm. So because my husband was in the Air Force, we were stationed in Korea, which is the whole reason I started my YouTube channel. And so I was able to do it. And then when I got back to the States, I had made more money in that year on YouTube that we were there. And I was able to find the American priced, was able to afford the childcare so I could continue to progress everything that we were doing for it. And yeah, I would not be able to do anything that I do if my husband wasn't a stay-at-home dad taking care of my kids, because
yeah, I think that's the whole big problem in the US, because I think it's the most expensive country to bring your kids into daycare. In most countries, they are subsidized by the government. But yeah, hopefully we're going somewhere.
I mean, that's a whole issue in itself. Again, it's a very female woman specific issue where it's like we're mothers, we grow people, they need us to live, and trying to balance the things that we have to do while also taking care of them is very difficult. And I think a lot of mothers want to be there for their kids, especially when they're babies and developing into stuff. and hitting certain milestones. And then once they get to school, then we ask ourselves the question, like, well, what now? Now that I have time back, like, how do I do this? And if you're able to figure out a path to balance it and do it and work with your partner, if you have one, just figuring it out. But yeah, I don't disagree with you. Childcare, worth it. Every cent, all the time. Take my babies. Let me go make the money and bring them back to me. And I'll
Yeah,
for sure. Yeah. Look, I'm really sorry to interrupt, but did you know that YouTube is the world's second biggest search engine? Maybe you did, maybe you didn't, but that's why every creator truly needs to be using vidIQ to grow their YouTube channel. vidIQ's tech helps you tailor your video ideas to match what people are searching for right now on YouTube. And once you're ready to upload, well, it starts optimizing and getting you all the details that you need to make sure your videos are getting noticed. If you really want to dive in more and get started for free, please head over to thewomenofyoutube.com/vidIQ to get started on this YouTube channel changing tool that's going to make things so much easier for you. All right, let's get back to it. So you've been building out this business. So tell me about the business you have built from YouTube. You had mentioned that you have this business from Silicon Valley and you're having success. And so talk to us about your business journey. And that way we can kind of ask some questions and based on what you have going on so we can learn from it as well.
Mm-hmm. So in terms of, like, I guess, revenue streams, there's Google AdSense, which is kind of, I call it passive income just because, you know, I don't have to necessarily do anything to generate that kind of income. So that is great, but this is not the number one. I think number one is actually creating your own product and my courses, because I do launches. So some months they will be number one, some months I won't make any money just because we haven't launched anything. But creating your own product for me, as an entrepreneur also, I just love building products. I love helping people in their journey. So this is number one source of income. Number two would be brand deals. Mm-hmm. And depending on the channel, but Silicon Valley Girl, I think also because I called it Silicon Valley Girl, like for once I hit 30,000 followers and maybe even less, I had brand deals willing to sponsor some videos, which is super great. I'm super grateful for it. With Lingua Marina, by the way, it's so funny. It's 4.5 million followers, like a lot more views. But because it's a different audience and different demographic, like students, I don't get a lot of brand deals. I maybe get like once a month, once in 2 months. And my Russian channel is also like good in terms of brand deals. And then what else is there? Oh, affiliate. But I'm not the best person to talk about affiliate. I recently talked to a couple of financial YouTubers and they're like, I made $300,000 on affiliates in like, I don't know, last month because I was referring to this brokerage app for crypto. Mm-hmm. I'm like, what? I made $300 on Amazon last month. My affiliate. So this is how huge, like there's this huge difference depending on the niche, how much you can make in affiliate programs. And I've heard like Ali Abdal shared that he made almost like hundreds of thousands on this keyboard affiliate. Like this is something I've never experienced myself, but I know a lot of people who actually make a lot in affiliate income. And then, you know, just random deals that I have sometimes. Oh, I also have a deal with Bilibili, the Chinese platform. So I post there, we repurpose content there and get paid for views. So yeah, like multiple different sources, but top three will be your own product, brand deals, and AdSense.
I love that. Now, I want to talk about something that you have that is, I think, so unique to you. I think it's a massive opportunity for people who are bilingual. You have a Russian-speaking channel. Mm-hmm. And then you also have these English-speaking channels as well. What are the differences between those two? Like, what's the difference between an English YouTube channel and a foreign language channel? How are they treated different? Is the AdSense better? Is like how you execute different? Like what is that? We'll talk about that world.
Yeah, AdSense is super different across three channels. So the best AdSense revenues are if you post in English and if you talk about topics like business, investment, crypto, and like all of the financial stuff, real estate, because you get advertisers who are willing to advertise to that demographic and they're willing to pay a lot because mm-hmm. you have good paying audience. If we're talking about like the the worst paying audience. I don't know if I can say that, but yeah, like Google AdSense pays less if your content is more like kids related or very, like, I don't know, experiments. Like what happens if you mix Coca-Cola with this Mentos and how is it going to explode? Like, you don't get the most highly paying advertisers there. Regarding the dynamic of the content, I think Russian channel, like it's really, you need to feel the audience. Like every country is so different. For example, Russians, they would be like, they are always looking for things you're trying to conceal or whether you're like they're always looking for a conspiracy in your content. And they're like, they trying to see whether you're lying or whether you're not actually in the US. Like, this is kind of funny, but at the same time, like if you connect with them, they're like your best friends. And if I meet people in the street and if they're Russian, they'd be like, oh my God, Marina. But if I meet people who are Americans, they would be like, I like your content. And they would be like, so it's just this, I don't know. It's just this cultural thing. Or like people from Asia, they would also be like really excited to see me. Yeah, it's just, you know, just different cultural things.
That's got to be really fun though, to be able to have had that like cross-platform, cross-cultural like proof that you've been able to build out. What's the same? Like what's the same across all of your channels?
I talk about things that I love. Otherwise, I'm unable to talk about things that I'm not passionate about. Like, I love languages. I love the US. I like creating products, businesses. I like talking to people. So I won't be able to create content just to get views. This is something that I can't do. And if I try to, I fail like 100%. I've done that a couple of times and yeah.
So over the course of your YouTube career, you have learned a lot. So what do you think is one of the most overlooked details or mistakes that you see YouTubers making that's probably hurting their success?
Delaying to start. A lot of people are like, oh, maybe in a couple months when this and this happens, when I have more time. The problem is the earlier you start, the earlier you will have all of those videos that I'm not going to perform. And this is great. This is the way you find your voice. This is the way you realize what people actually want to hear from you. And because a lot of people are afraid to make this mistake, and like in general, we're afraid to make mistakes, but this is something that we need to change in our, in us, because the more mistakes you make at the beginning, the faster you realize like, oh, this is the type of content they want. Because with all of my channels, I went through a stage where I was posting and posting and posting and the views were tanking all the time. I would be like, what is happening? And so with one of my channels, I had the situation where I was like, okay, I have like, I don't remember, like maybe 100,000 followers, but I had 5 to 6K views per video, which was like, the conversion rates were so low. I was like, maybe I should just stop posting because people are not watching. They're not interested. And instead of doing this, I just challenged myself to posting twice a week instead of posting once a week. And I just doubled down on creating all kinds of content. And in like 3 weeks, I was able to create like how to get into, I took a course. I was taking a course back then in LA, in NYFA, New York Film Academy. Then I was like content about fundraising in Silicon Valley, content about English. And I did so many different experiments. And then suddenly one video just started gaining more and more views. And after that, I realized, oh, this is where I need to focus. And, you know, that was such a game changer. So now I think people are trying to polish their strategy before posting. And I think with all of the new tools, like you don't even have to produce a long form video. Create 10 different shorts, post them on Shorts, TikTok, Instagram, see what performs. And this is, I don't know if you know Justin Kun. This is his strategy with social media. So he's, assistant or manager. She sends them like 10 different questions and tells them to answer them on TikTok. He answers them, records the video. And if one video performs well, they make a long form video on YouTube. So they are able to test the topics before actually creating a long form content. So this is for me, 2021 is one of the best years to start because you have this unfair advantage where the algorithm pushes short videos. You have this unfair advantage where you don't have to create platform-specific content because you can just make one video to post everywhere. And then third, you have platforms competing for creators, and that means YouTube Shorts Fund, 100 million. Instagram paying you 20, what is like 100 or 200 bucks to go live. TikTok introducing different, like they are competing. They're they're giving out more and more money to creators. And I think this is just amazing.
I love that thing. I've been having a lot of fun with YouTube Shorts too, because I do so many tutorials on my channel. I've been doing like making shorts about like how to do things really easily with shorts, and it's been great for views. I mean, it's not great for like reach and AdSense because it's a totally different thing.
Oh, yeah.
Like my long form videos are just a journey for sure.
Yeah.
But I love that you talked about that with shorts, and hopefully they can do more with shorts in 2022 to help with growth and stuff for creators so they can make more money. I know a guy that has millions of subscribers on his shorts only YouTube channel, and he's like, I barely make enough to like cover my rent and stuff so that I can just keep doing this.
Yeah, I think he'll probably get the cut of this YouTube Shorts fund. They just started distributing it a couple of weeks ago, I think.
Did you qualify for that?
Yeah, I qualified for $100.
And you have like what, hundreds of millions of views on your shorts?
Yeah. Well, I have millions probably, but the thing is their strategy with this fund is to give it to people who get most views on shorts, and that means Mr. Beast, you know, all the people who are just getting a lot of views anyways. But I think they're evolving into figuring out like how do we make it something comparable to Google AdSense for long videos.
What are your thoughts on Mr. Beast? And what's happening for him as a creator and everything that he's done? He's become kind of like the industry's gold standard.
Yeah, well, he's an amazing. You've seen him on VidSummit, right? He's amazing, yeah. Super approachable and a fun guy. Yeah, I think it's just, you know, what a lot of people think, they watch Mr. Beast videos and they're like, oh, I have to do the same. Like, I have to do this type of challenge or whatever. This is his niche. And it happened that way that this niche appeals to a lot of people, and this is why he gets a lot of views. But it's really important to tell yourself, like, for me, this is not the type of content I'm passionate about. And I don't necessarily produce content just to get more views. I produce content just because I want to talk about things that I'm passionate about. And I think this is number one thing people need to tell themselves, like, I am not going to compete with Mr. Beast. I'm not going to copy content just because it performs really well on this platform. I'm going to be honest with myself. Yes, I'm going to experiment with different formats, but I'm going to talk about things that I truly love, because this is the only way to continue. And YouTube and social media, it is a long distance game, like at least a year, I would say, in order to get the first follower base to kind of start making money on it. So you really need to love it in order to get traction.
I don't disagree with you one bit. What's a mistake that you have made as a creator that we could learn from?
Of just trying to copy others, trying to experiment with topics just because I see them trending, and I'll be like, oh, I need to make this type of video as well. And my subscribers be like, what? And me myself, like making this video, I'll be like, what am I doing? But let's try. But this is also a good thing, I think. Like what I do on TikTok now, I have this account that is kind of, I just started to experiment. And yesterday I showed my husband one of the videos and he's like, what are you doing? Like, this is not you. And this is super weird. But I think, and he also told me, but this is great that you're experimenting. And this way you understand that this is not your type of content. Or maybe this format is yours. So experimenting, and it's okay to be embarrassed. Again, with TikTok, just random people are going to see your videos, or with shorts. And it is great feedback for you, and it's a great experiment.
I love that. So I always like to do this, which is a little rapid fire, just so people can know like how you're doing things and learn from you a little bit more. So first things first is, what do you film with?
Sony ZV-1, I think. And for short content, of course, my phone.
Okay. Who is your favorite female YouTube creator right now?
Great question. I've started watching a lot of Gary Vee in the past 2 weeks because he talks about NFTs and metaverse, and I'm super excited. I'm in the middle of watching his interview with Mark Zuckerberg.
What about female YouTube creators?
Emma Chamberlain. She's like – Oh my God, this is the type of content, again, almost every day. I love her vlogs. I love her style. And when I'm watching creators like Gary Vee, I have this FOMO. I have this, oh my God, I'm not working enough. When I watch Emma, I'm so happy with my life and myself. And I just love this dynamic with her content.
Who is a dream collaboration for you?
Gary Vee.
Love it. And what is your favorite video that you have made so far to date?
Great question. Well, I'm kind of biased because I also want to name videos that got the most views, just because they were like kind of unique to the platform. So I made this video about pronouncing brand names correctly. And I went on to different stores on Union Square in San Francisco. So I just went into a store and I was like, how do you pronounce Louis Vuitton? And people would explain how you pronounce the brand name. That was kind of fun. But also all of my interviews, I'm such a huge fan of people. So just talking to people for hours. One of my favorite was, oh my God, they're all so amazing. I like Sriram Krishnan interview. He has his Clubhouse show. Yeah, Ankur, co-founder of Teachable, just came out yesterday. Also great guy. Like, I think I enjoyed everyone who I interviewed.
And what is the next YouTube goal that you're looking forward to meeting?
I'm just experimenting with shorts. I think I am a little bit tired of, not tired, but like my format has always been teaching people, explaining things. I want to be more fun. I want to experiment with dancing and singing and putting on a wig or like old ladies' glasses and like, you know, just trying to be more of an actor than a teacher. Yeah, I just want to experiment with new formats.
Absolutely love it. All right, well, how can people find you on the YouTubes?
So Lingua Marina, this is the English language teaching channel, Silicon Valley Girl, and Marina Mogilko, first and last name, is my Russian channel.
Love it. All right. Well, thank you so much for your time today and for sharing your journey with us. Remember, you and everyone that's listening are impossibly amazing. Until next time, we'll see you soon.
Thank you for listening to the Women of YouTube podcast. We would love to know what you thought about this latest episode. So make sure to tag us with hashtag Women of YouTube with your thoughts.